If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets, like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Welcome to The Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome in to another episode of The Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross, brought to you by RotoBaller. This is episode 369. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Eric Cross. We have another great guest with us today. But first, let's bring on my 80 grade co-host, Mr. Chris Clegg. Chris, how's it going, bud? Is there any more snow down there?
No, fortunately not. I hope it's gone for good. I saw we're supposed to get up to the 60s this week, which is big. Like, I mean, I'm happy with that, considering it's been highs of like in the 30s every day this past couple of weeks, which is bad. But I broke my thumb.
Oh no!
Playing basketball.
What'd you do?
Pick up basketball. I don't know. I went up for a rebound and literally jammed it and broke it. So like, if you see them, not that we have the video, but like it's literally just so swollen and jacked up. So it's bad.
I mean,
so that's what's new with me is a broken thumb. I hit in the IL for hopefully not too long.
I've never broken a finger playing basketball as I played, from pee wee ball up through varsity. Yeah, but I jammed many a finger, so and that even hurt like a mother. So yeah, breaking it, that's a whole new level. So speedy recovery to you, sir. But luckily, you don't need that thumb to talk about pitchers today.
That's true.
Thankfully, but we got again another great guest. We had Eno with us on part one, and we're going big here in part two. Everyone knows this guy. He's a writer and podcaster over at FanGraphs, the infamous Sleeper and the Bust podcast, and a content designer for Out of the Park Baseball, Mr. Paul Sporer, at Sporer, S-P-O-R-E-R, on Twitter. Paul, how's it going, bud?
It's going well, gentlemen. Thank you guys so much for having me. We were talking about it a bit offline, but we're almost to the next season. We made it through the winter. Pitchers and catchers will be here before you know it. Drafts are already going. And it's not just the sickos who are drafting, as people kind of get back into it. We're starting to get some of the other folks in, and I feel like the Super Bowl is that point of demarcation where things really kick into the next gear.
Oh, yeah. It's not just like us doing like best balls in DCs in freaking October or out at first pitch Arizona or anything like that. Like, no, yeah. Draft season definitely is heating up now, and yeah, you got Super Bowl another week. When's Super Bowl? Is it the 9th or whatever that is?
I would imagine 2 weeks from today.
Yeah, 2 weeks from today, yeah. So
that would make sense.
So I think that's the 9th. Yeah, then we'll be fully in the heart of draft season, but we still got plenty to talk about as we're still going through our positional series here. We got two more episodes today with Paul, and then finish it off with some relievers later this week with Mr. Mike Carter, a good friend of the podcast. Before we get into all of the pitching goodness here, the usual housekeeping. You can find us on Twitter. Again, Paul is at Sporer, S-P-O-R-E-R. Chris is at Chris Clegg, MILB. I am at Eric Cross, MLB. Show is at Toolshed Pod. If you enjoy the pod, please rate and review. Make sure you check out both of Chris and I's personal platforms, thedynastydugout.com and toolshedfantasy.com for more work from each of us. All of our rankings are over there. And you got to make sure you check out all the great content over on RotoBaller. Use the code TOOLSHED at checkout to get 10% off any premium package. I mean, if you still want to do basketball, football, you can, but obviously right now, baseball is ramping up over there. Tons of great content. So, again, code TOOLSHED, 10% off at checkout for any premium package over on rotoballer.com. All right, so let's start off with our – so we already did top 25 with Eno. We'll go 26 through 50 today with Paul. So we'll start with our rankings 26 through – I guess we'll go through 35. Chris, who are those guys for you?
All right, I've got Framber Valdez checking in right out of the gate, followed by Logan Webb, Spencer Schwellenbach, Jackson Jobe, Grayson Rodriguez, and then 31 through 35, Joe Ryan, Max Fried, Hunter Brown, Shota Imanaga, and Bailey Ober.
All right, for me, I got Andrew Painter, Jackson Jobes, two prospects right there to kick it off, Freddie Peralta, Spencer Schwellenbach, Max Fried, Logan Webb at 31, Joe Ryan, Zach Gallen, Hunter Brown, and Shota Imanaga round out my 26 through 35. So, Paul, I wanted to start out with a couple of the Atlanta arms that broke out this past season. One a little bit older, one younger, one a rookie, with Spencer Schwellenbach, and also Reynaldo Lopez, who was a, you know, obviously reliever for the longest time and a pretty good one. But last year converted to the rotation, and we actually saw one of his starts down at First Pitch Florida in early March or late February, I believe it was. And he pitched well then, I remember that. But then I don't think anyone could imagine him going to a 1.99 ERA in 135 and two-thirds innings, 1.11 whip, 7.7% walk rate, 27.3% strikeout rate. Meanwhile, Schwellenbach, I mean, all those young Atlanta arms, you know, A.J. Smith-Shawver, Hurston Waldrip, and Schwellenbach is the one that breaks out and has a phenomenal rookie year. 21 starts, 3.35 ERA, 1.04 whip, only a 4.6% walk rate, 25.5% strikeout rate. It's kind of two different profiles here, you know, 7 years apart, Paul. But are you a believer in either Schwellenbach or Lopez, or are you fading them and not really fully buying the breakouts?
No, I would say I lean close to believer on both, if not an outright believer on both of them, really, too. You know, I've been a long-time Reynaldo Lopez fan. It paid off big last year. Probably the 1 year I really wasn't expecting it. I was kind of getting token pickups on a just-in-case situation. Like, oh, well, he's starting right now, I guess, you know, my guy. I'll stick with him one more year, and it paid off beautifully, kind of made up for all those other years where I was touting and promoting Reylo, and it was he'd show flashes, but it really wasn't taking off. Meanwhile, Schwellenbach kind of came out of nowhere. I mean, not nowhere. He was a prospect of some acclaim, but to be that good that fast, I do think was surprising. One thing for sure, though, is there is a pretty substantial price split between them. I think the market believes in Schwellenbach a lot more, and I get it. It's a little bit more of an unknown that you can dream on as a prospect. I think, you know, when you have somebody like Reynaldo Lopez, who is a bit more established, people are going to think, hey, he's going to come back to earth. That probably wasn't fully real. And I agree. A 1.99 ERA isn't very real. I wouldn't think it was very real for many starters, though, right? Like Pete DeGrom, Pete Kershaw, a handful of guys that you would ever believe that a 1.99 is quote-unquote real. But take his Sierra, skill interactive ERA, a stat that I like, 3.58 for Reynaldo Lopez with a 1.11 whip. I mean, if he's somewhere in the mid-threes there with strikeouts and a decent whip, I think you're still really liking what Reynaldo Lopez can give you. And he's going closer to SP50, whereas Schwellenbach's about half that at SP26. Now, again, there are scenarios where I'll pay for either or both. I like both guys. But on a bang-for-your-buck situation, I do think Reylo is offering that more because the market isn't overrating that season. We have enough of a track record to be a little bit cautious with him. But as you pointed out, Eric, it's not like he was a bad reliever. This is not a bad pitcher turned good. This is a good reliever who was a very appealing prospect many moons ago that we thought could turn good in the starting role, finally turning good at age 30. I understand being a little bit tepid on it, but I'm going to lean more toward Lopez at his price. I'll buy Schwellenbach as well, though.
Yeah, I'm kind of there with you. I like both these guys. And Lopez, I'll start with him. Like obviously there's going to be ERA regression. But I said mid-threes, and I think the K rate is legit. I mean, he had a 30% K rate in 2023, and last year he had a whiff rate above 35% on both the curve and the slider. Slider was actually 44%. Batting average gets under 170 on both. And even the fastball, you know, he only had two home runs on the fastball and only 10 home runs total. So good at, you know, limiting the damage in the air. Even, he didn't have a super high ground ball rate, but just didn't give up too many, you know, hard hit balls in the air, which is good to see. And like you mentioned, the walk rate, pretty good as well, dropping that down to 7.5%. So yeah, I think you could see maybe similar strikeout and walk rates, but, you know, add another run or, you know, run and a quarter, run and a half or whatever. But that's still like a top 40, 50 arm, I think. So yeah, I'm definitely buying him, and Schwellenbach too. I love the combination of stuff and, you know, that low walk rate. He had two pitches over a 40% whiff rate, 96 mile per hour cheese, got some good ground ball rates. So yeah, I'm definitely in on both at cost, and so I'm gonna try to buy both if I can.
A rookie like Schwellenbach with that kind of control that he displayed and the depth of arsenal, I mean, he's looking like a 7-year vet at that point. That's the kind of arsenal that you see from somebody who's been fully established. And instead, it's a 24-year-old who's looking like somebody in his early 30s. So yeah, it's hard to be against either of them. It's just that if you want to pay the price for Schwellenbach, because there is risk, right? We've seen plenty of guys in their second year. The sophomore slump is a thing for a reason. It doesn't happen to everybody, but there's enough of a give back for guys that it wouldn't be that surprising. I just think there's a lot to believe in with Schwellenbach that I don't think he's going to collapse in his second year.
Totally agree. Chris, what do you think about your two Atlanta guys here?
Yeah, I mean, Schwellenbach's just insanely impressive. I mean, we are talking about somebody that was a shortstop in college and seldom pitched. He had TJ during his draft year and didn't pitch much at all until like midseason 2023. And to come out and do what he did was absolutely nuts. And the Braves are great at identifying those guys. We've seen them do it time and time again, getting the two ways. Owen Murphy's another one. I know he went down with TJ last year, but another one that was really rising up. And Schwellenbach's exactly that. I mean, he's a command specialist with a deep arsenal, and he can miss bats. So I think it's hard to argue against him. There may be some regression, but still be solid. And I think with Raylo, you can have the regression and still be extremely fine. Like, he can afford to take a little bit of a step back closer to the ERA indicators, like his FIP or Sierra, as Paul mentioned, and he's still extremely valuable, especially given where he's going in drafts. Like, you're not paying for him to repeat what he did in 2024. So I think the investment's fine in 2025 and long-term. I know the cost on Schwellenbach is becoming quite high, but if you believe there's another gear, which there absolutely could be, then he's worth buying. And I think in a dynasty format, Ronaldo Lopez is a good buy too, just because a lot of people don't believe in him. I think a lot of people are just assuming that he fades off and doesn't even come close to repeating, which, again, like I said, he doesn't need to be. Like, if he can be your SP3-4 and provide solid numbers across the board, I'll take it.
Yeah, it's a rare guy that we see the market not overrating a previously big season with Ronaldo Lopez, because, again, they've been burnt in the past, and I get it. But I just saw, again, as a longtime believer, I saw enough to stick with him. And if you get in the right room, you can get Raylo past pick 200. He has a wide range on his ADP that goes from a min of 104 to a max of 245. Now, that's across a ton of different drafts. But the bottom line is, if you find yourself with 14 other folks who really don't like Raylo and you're the one person, late 100s, early 200s could be the price point that you get on him. I would secure him a little bit earlier than that, closer to that 150 ADP. But yeah, you might get lucky sometimes too, and he'll fall into your lap.
Yeah, I think it'd be much different if Lopez was like age 26.
For sure.
And 31's not old. We've seen that for pitchers. Like 31 for pitchers is almost like 27 for hitters, at least in my mind, where, you know, that's still like right in the middle of your prime. We've seen guys like, you know, Wheeler and Nola, you know, age very gracefully.
A lot of aces don't really emerge until their late 20s into their early 30s, right? They might show the glimpses early and
Cole
take
Reagan's
some time to get there. I mean, look at one of the premier aces from the last generation here, Max Scherzer. Obviously, many folks know that I'm a big Tigers fan, and we had him and kind of grew him in his mid-20s there, where it was looking like, oh, this guy can't go the distance. He's a good pitcher, but not that great. Hit that one Cy Young in 13 with the Tigers, had another good year the following year. Then became the best pitcher in baseball, or at least one of the top three in Washington there, and that was ages 30 through 34 there with Washington. And then if you take it back to the two good years with Detroit, that's 28 to 34. So that's a great point there. And I know we're really age-focused in general, and obviously you guys as prospect folks totally makes sense, but I think sometimes we use it too much as a blunt tool where it's like 31 is old, thus bad. And it's like, no, it's really not. And he doesn't really show a ton of wear and tear. Now, Raylo only had 136 innings last year, but we don't need guys to be the 180, 200 beasts of previous, like 140, 150, that can get the job done and still be an easy top 30 type guy.
Yep, 100%. As we already talked about one rookie going into his sophomore year, let's talk about two more here with Hunter Brown and Jared Jones of the Astros and Pirates respectively. Brown was absolutely atrocious to start the season and then became one of, you know, like the 15, 20 best pitchers in baseball for the last, you know, four and a half months or so. Overall, ERA of 3.49, 179 strikeouts in 170 innings, 1.27 whip. And Jared Jones, kind of the opposite, started out really hot and kind of faded a bit, had an injury in there, was limited to 22 starts, 121 and two-thirds innings, the 4.14 ERA, 7.7% walk rate, and a 26.2% strikeout rate. Are you a believer in either of these two guys, Paul? And do you think that either Hunter Brown or Jared Jones could take that next step and maybe become, you know, like top 20, top 25 starters or so?
A general resounding yes to all the questions. I love both these guys. I'm a gigantic Hunter Brown guy. So I was really bummed early on last year. And frankly, some of my stubbornness was the reason that I kept him, because I think there were some justifications to cut early. It's easy to look back now and say, well, you should have just held through because you got a 2 ERA for the final 20 starts or whatever. He had a 9.78 through the first month. What do we often tell people? Give it a month. Give it 5 weeks, right? Like, at least show him an amount of time with your mid-round picks. Don't just cut him after one bad start. So if someone gave him six starts and got a 9.78 ERA out of it, at least in some of the shallower formats, I wasn't going to crush anybody for cutting Hunter Brown. But as our friend over at Yahoo, Scott Pianowski, says, if you never make a bad cut during a season, you're probably too tight with your cuts, right? If you're just always unwilling to cut a guy, quote-unquote early, then you're just probably holding too long through too much bad stuff. So that's one where people might have gotten burned, but it made sense to cut just as much as it made sense to take the shot on picking him back up and getting that beautiful summer out of Brown. I am definitely drawn to him by the fact that he models himself after my favorite pitcher ever, Justin Verlander. Had to have been so cool for him to kind of work with Verlander and maybe learn some things from him too. But I fully believe in what he did. And I know we had that early season volatility. Let's hope that that doesn't happen again. You got to cut through some of those ugly starts. But if he can limit the real duds, and he had a 9 earned run outing at KC in 2/3 of an inning, and then a 7 earned run dud at Minnesota, that was in 6 innings. That's more of a normal bad outing. But if he can cut some of the duds, I think we have a huge season in the offing for Hunter Brown. And then as for Jared Jones, it's as simple as staying healthy, right? We saw it last year. We see how this can work. They might have a dynamic 1-2 ace punch. Skeens was there the whole year, whereas Jones fell off late due to injury. But as far as his skills go, I find them relatively unimpeachable. The only concerns I would have are the health. He does throw 97. The harder you throw, the more risk you are. But I don't go around trying to dodge every health risk with pitching, because then who are you going to draft? Nobody. Because nobody is a safe bet as a pitcher, folks. It's a myth. So, you know, be calculated with your gamble. Some guys are more risky than others. But I'm going to take a guy like Jared Jones, because I do think he's coming off of the bad end of the season being injured, and it has lowered the price. I don't think he should be available at pick 130. I think that's probably about 30 picks too cheap. You know, so just two rounds maybe in a 15-teamer. But I would take him in that same range as Brown, because I have them ranked back-to-back. Max Fried is in that area. Tyler Glass now is in that area. Sonny Gray, like, good guys. I like them. But I would take Jones in that area as well. I'm open to considering him that high. So I think he's a bit of a discount, whereas Brown at pick, right around pick 100, is totally fine with me.
Yeah. And with Brown, yeah, you mentioned with Verlander, he had so many just veteran arms there, like Framber Valdez. You know, a lot of veteran arms in that rotation that he just learned from, and you saw Brown add in the sinker this past year through that about 18% of the time.
That was the game changer, right? Like he pivoted to that in season. Brown did, and that was what kind of spurred everything getting back on track for him.
Yeah, you look at the obviously the sinker. You usually will see a higher batting average against on the sinker than a four seamer, but you look at there's only a 3.21 slug allowed, which is a quick math. 0.046 ISO, and the average EV allowed on his sinker was only 77.5 miles an hour. I mean, didn't get a lot of whiffs, so that, but you don't need to. That's not what the sinker is meant for. It's meant to do exactly what he did. And yeah, he had a ground ball rate, but that actually was a lower ground ball rate than usual for him. But still, 48.5%, still a pretty good ground ball rate. So, Chris, what are your thoughts on Brown and Jones? Now, two guys we talked about a good amount on this podcast, but still, you know, potential top 25 guys.
Yeah, I think both are on that cusp for me, being the top 25, and I think both make that leap. You know, Brown has just got such a deep arsenal of pitches, and I think the command improved throughout the year. That was a big thing. The sinker especially, I mean, he lived in the zone more with it, but he located it well. Like, you see the strike rate on the sinker, you see the zone rate. Like, it was a positive thing for him, in my opinion, because, you know, there have been times throughout Hunter Brown's career where we wondered, like, where the command control would be. And I think those things have ticked up. And when you have that kind of arsenal that he does, there's the ability to miss plenty of bats while also, you know, limiting the hard contact like we saw. He's just got enough diverseness where he's like, okay, I really believe this can play. Does he stick it that like he did down the stretch? I don't know, but I don't need him to. Like, I think that Brown's going to be really solid this year. Yeah, I think we see the innings probably tick up. So, yeah, I'm pretty in on Brown. And Jones is an interesting one for me because I'm actually a little surprised that people have faded him like they have, especially given how buzzy he was early in 2024. Like, Jared Jones was like the buzzy pitcher that everybody thought was becoming the ace. And then Paul Skeens came up and obviously Jones missed some time. Everybody wants to knock Jones for the two-pitch mix. I understand that. But he started using the curveball substantially more down the stretch of the season. In September, he used the curveball at a 16% rate. And he used the changeup much more in August and September, too. I'd like to see those things stick. I'd feel a little more confident. This is a killer fastball-slider combo. We have to remember that that worked for Spencer Strider for several years before Strider obviously added the curve last year. We didn't get to see it in full extent before he went down. But I think that Jared Jones can live as a primary two-pitch guy, just given how good and unique that fastball is. Yep. High riding pitch, upper 90s. Like, I love the fastball, and I think his slider is really good, too. If he throws the curveball more, then I'm in.
I think we have to be careful roundly dismissing anybody as a two-pitch guy just out of hand, because while, yes, that is concerning and we like deeper arsenals for obvious reasons, you named one of the biggest guys who succeeded with it, Strider, and that doesn't mean everyone's going to be Strider.
Yeah.
But I do think Jones is more in a Strider class than like a mid-tier guy, right? Like, he has that sort of major upside. I'm not just going to put everybody who has a good fastball-slider combo and say, well, Spencer Strider. But I do think you can do that with Jared Jones and get away with it, because when he was on, he showed that he can be a monster. Maybe not top of the scale like Strider, but in that upper echelon of top 25, 30 pitchers. So yeah, I think being able to buy on him a little bit cheaper because he didn't end the season on the field has people irked. He's somebody that if you are somebody who drafts throughout all the winter into the spring, you're probably going to be getting better prices on Jones now, because once people start to see him again in spring, if of course he's healthy and looking good, that price is going to skyrocket, in my opinion. And I think he could be, by the time, you know, I don't know if you guys are going to Vegas for the main or anything like that, but by the time main event season comes, Jared Jones, if he's looking good in spring, could be a top 100 pick.
Yeah, I think so too.
Absolutely. And another example, a name that we talked about last episode with Eno, that you mentioned a few minutes ago, Paul, Tyler Glasnow. I mean, obviously it was fastball, curveball, then he added the slider, which was even better than the curveball, which was stupid. But yeah, he was that pretty much that kind of quote-unquote two-pitch guy for a bit there too. So yeah, it definitely can work. And yeah, I think both these guys are going to have, you know, even better years. I mean, if you can, maybe Brown's not as good as he was for the final 4 months, but you hopefully cut out the April and early part of May. I mean, I think he could be a low threes ERA guy, you know, with above average strikeout rate, top 25-ish. I don't know if he'll ever become like an ace. I don't think he will. But could he be like a, you know, back into SP or high end three, given your depth of your league? Yeah, I think that's kind of where he'll settle in. And Jones, I think right in that same range. Maybe he's a little more upside, a little more downside as well. And maybe Brown's a little bit safer, but I think both kind of end up in that range. So I think they both could take steps forward this year. Next name on the list here, guy that was considered a top 20 arm for the last several years, but kind of had a little bit of a down year, though not terrible. But Zach Gallen, who's now, this can go out just off redraft ADP, is the 52nd pitcher off the board, but they combine relievers and starters. So that's probably SP, 37 to 40, something like that. ADP has dropped down to about 100.
38. Yep, you nailed it.
38. Okay, I've kind of figured it's always like one quarter of the names that are relievers.
That's a good that's a good shorthand. I wish they'd split it. I asked them again this year. For some reason, they can't over at the NFBC. But yeah, I do it manually.
How much do we have to pay?
I know. I was just like, I understand that they're all P on our roster. I get that. But in the data, can we not split them up somehow? But anyway, I digress.
I know. That's something that, I've been hoping for that for a while. Maybe next year. Yeah, who knows? Probably not. But yeah, now Gallen's now in that late 30s range after being a guy who was top 20 for several years. So, are you kind of buying a little bounce back from Gallen here? I mean, obviously, he still was good. 3.65 ERA last year, 1.26 whip, 25% K rate. So it wasn't like the stats fell off a cliff or anything, but the value seems to have dropped a good amount. So are you looking to buy that dip?
I actually am, because for me, and I'll get y'all's opinions on this too, was this not just a classic case of World Series hangover, not only for Gallen, but for the team? I really don't see it as anything but that. And that's why I had a fade on him coming into the year. I thought it was, again, pretty straightforward. I'm not even trying to act like I called something grand. I saw all those innings he put on, and, you know, you hear guys in the game talk about it, you should put like a 1.25 to 1.5 accelerator on playoff innings in terms of how much they tax you. So he didn't just pitch 34 innings in the playoffs. Let's go the conservative route and call that about 43 innings worth of wear and tear, in addition to the 210 he pitched to get him in there for Gallen. And that was just a big workload. And it's not like he completely blew up, fell apart this year. Like you said, he was still pretty fine. If anything, the volume was what hurt you a little bit, 148 on the innings. But yeah, I'll buy the dip here. I think it's a little bit too much of an overcorrection. And I'm kind of glad, because I think he is somebody that you can kind of sneak in there as your second pitcher. You know, if you're going super late, right? Like, I think there's a world where you pound offense super early. You make Gallen your ace as part of like a 3-in-a-row pitching situation. I wouldn't necessarily be averse to that if I'm getting three of like Roky, Gallen, Steele, Rodon, Strider, Jones. Like, I'm just naming a few guys off the top that all go in the same area. But if I can get three of those guys after starting crazy hitters early, I'm not against that. I still love Gallen. I think he's going to bounce back and be back closer to his normal self, which is lower 3s ERA, good whip, and the volume coming back into the 170s, 180s.
Yeah, I just got him. Both Chris and I are in a Dynasty Auction League. Well, it was part auction. That we auctioned off first 10 players for each team.
Oh, cool.
and then draft the rest. And yeah, I got him, I think it was running for like $9 as my SP2. I have pretty risky pitching staff, but I got the two guys I got in auction for pitchers were, for starters at least, were McClanahan and Gallen. So a little, you know, a little risky there, but I like them. You know, but I still love McClanahan a good amount as
me
well.
Too.
But yeah, that was a World Series hangover. I think the biggest hangover went to Corbin Carroll, who we forgot how obviously he had the shoulder issue too. I'm not gonna say that wasn't a part of it, but yeah, he probably had the biggest hangover. Didn't forget how to hit a home run until about July or so. But Chris, are you buying the dip on Gallen as well?
Yeah, you mentioned risky. I think it's safe. I think Gallen's a safe arm, honestly. I mean, he's steady year over year. Like, you know what you're going to get out of him. And outside of the 2021 season, like, he's been exceptional pretty much every year he's on the mound. I wouldn't even call last year bad, honestly. I mean,
right.
You know, he still put up good results. And as Paul mentioned, like, we're looking at like 250 innings the previous season, which is nuts. I mean, find another pitcher that can handle that and then come in the next year and do it again. So, yeah, I think he's primed for a big bounce back. I think it's, you know, a great value right now. I mean, because you look kind of under the hood and everything was pretty much the same for the most part. He walked a few more guys, but at the end of the day, like, I'm not looking too much into that for Zach Gallen, but I do really believe in the arsenal still. I believe in his ability to get strikeouts. He's not going to obviously wow you with strikeouts, but he's going to live in that 25-27% range, and it'll absolutely play because the ratios are so good, and he's going to get wins. The team's good, so... Yeah, I definitely like Gallen. I think that it's a safe pick, if I'm being honest, in the range where he's going, like as far as arms go. I like the value on him a lot this year.
I really like that McClanahan-Gallen combo. I agree that that's not that risky. And like I said, if somebody in that league has like Skeens and Crochet and they're thinking that they don't have a risky staff, again, I just don't believe in that. I think all pitching is super, super risky. Yes, there are degrees, but all of them start up here. Because if you're pitching, you are at risk. So, no, I think a Gallen buyback and a McClanahan buyback is a neat little 1-2 punch there at the top.
Yeah, a lot of the other arms are just going a lot more than I wanted to. And plus, I went heavy early on hitting. Like, I got White Langford for a bunch. I got Jaron Duran for a bunch. So, I didn't really have a lot of money to go, like, super in on some of these bids for pitchers. Mm-hmm. Like, I was in on Logan Gilbert. Chris, did you get Gilbert? Or is that the one you...
I backed off.
Okay.
Yeah, I was in until the very... It was literally, like... 4 seconds of the 8-hour clock, and this might be with like 4 seconds. So I was like, are you kidding me? And I wasn't going up again. So,
but yeah, Gilbert was one I was in on, but then that guy a little bit higher than I wanted to go and really had the means to go. But yeah, I like that. I mean, obviously, McClanahan's a bit more risky than Gallen, but yeah, I was okay buying those two dips for sure. All right, so let's move on to the next set of our rankings. This will be 36 through 50. For me, that is Justin Steele, Framber Valdez, who I'm thinking I have too low. I probably got to up him a little bit. Tanner Bibee, Jared Jones, Jack Flaherty, who still hasn't signed yet. Brian Wu at 41, Taj Bradley, Luis Gil, Sandy Alcantara, Reynaldo Lopez, Bailey Ober, Kodai Senga, Gavin Williams, Shane Baz, and Noah Schultz at 50. Chris, who you got 36 to 50?
Yeah, this range is a tough one for me, honestly. Like, I was looking at it, and, like, for dynasty values, I'm like, golly, some of these guys, I just don't know what to do with. But starting off with Luis Castillo at 36, Aaron Nola, 37, Tanner Bibee, Sandy Alcantara, and Ryan Pepiot. 41 through 45 is Brian Wu, Jack Flaherty, Shane Baz, Bubba Chandler, Andrew Painter. And then to round out the last five, Noah Schultz, Taj Bradley, Jacob deGrom, which, again, I have no clue what to do with him in Dynasty, Mackenzie Gore, and Kumar Rocker.
Yeah, no, I think anybody knows what to do with deGrom, both redraft, Dynasty. He's probably the toughest guy out there to figure out what you're going to get from him year to year. But we're going to start with Sandy Alcantara of the Miami Marlins, the lone good player left on that team, pretty much. After they got rid of the other few guys that were pretty good over the last few years, including trading Jake Berger away, so on and so forth. But obviously Sandy missed the entire 2024 year and had a down 2023 year when he had a 4.14 ERA. Still pitched 184 and two-thirds innings, which is actually low for his standards after being over 200 in each of these two seasons before that, and 197 back in 2019. So one of the workhorses in the game until he wasn't. But what are you expecting from Sandy Alcantara here moving forward, Paul? Do you think he's going to return to the Sandy of old, or maybe a little bit less than that?
I mean, pretty close to the Sandy of old. You know, give a little bit of a buffer for sure on a TJ returner. But if I recall correctly, didn't he have it late 2023? So I believe he's on an 18-month window. Yeah, he had his Tommy John surgery on October 6, 2023. So I do have a little bit more confidence in those guys when they get the extra time to return there, where it's more of an 18-month window as opposed to the 13, 14 months. So it doesn't guarantee anything, but he also wasn't a strikeout pitcher to begin with. He is a power pitcher, don't get me wrong, right? He throws 98 to 100-mile-an-hour sinkers, but we're already dealing with a strikeout rate that needs to be supplemented anyway, so I'm fine working around that. As long as Alcantara is living in that low 20s range, that works. And I think we'll kind of get some idea early in spring with regards to his control. That's usually the last piece to get come together when a Tommy John guy is coming back. And if he isn't walking guys all that much in spring, if he's still in his normal 5, 6, 7% range, it's all systems go for me with Sandy. I'm actually really excited to jump back on the train this year. I was a huge fan of his during the breakout and everything. And I think pick 160, which is about where he's going in some of these winter drafts, I got zero issue with that.
Yeah, I mean, obviously you're not getting the elite K rate from Sandy, but he's giving you the elite volume. I mean, up until, obviously, you know, last year he didn't pitch at all. The elite volume was there, and you got ERAs of, you know, 3.319 and 2.28 in 2020 through 2022. Yeah, and you just look at his heat maps on his pitches. Like, this is, like, you know, one of the poster boys for command that you love to see. Like, you know, where it was fastball up, sinker down and then to righties, changeup down and then slider down the way. Like, he hits his spots, limits the walks. I mean, walk rate's been right in that 6% range the last 3 years. You know, K rate's always been kind of around league, a little bit above league average for the most part, but you got that volume. Like, he was still giving you 201 strikeouts, 207 strikeouts, even if the K rate wasn't, you know, a super sexy percentage. But yeah, I think Sandy, maybe he's on ace again, but could he get back to being this, like, a really good and reliable SP2? Yeah, I think he absolutely could. Chris, what are your thoughts?
Real quick before Chris goes, I'm curious, and Chris, you can loop this into your answer. Do you have any concerns about the home runs from 2023? Because I think that's probably what's scaring some folks off, is that his 2023 following the Cy Young wasn't as good for Sandy. As I pointed out, I'm not as concerned by it. I think it was really just some kind of bad luck there with a few more homers going out. But do you carry any concern from the 2023 that was a bit off from the Cy Young pace?
I really don't.
Okay. Yeah, like I said, I'm not concerned, but I do think that that's part of driving Sandy's price down to 160.
And that's fair.
Yeah, I mean, it's just certainly an outlier in comparison to previous years. I think you'd have to go back to 2019 to find a similar kind of output like that as far as home runs go. And yeah, I think that the crazy thing is, you know, a couple of home runs really skews that the home run rate. So, like, you see that number and it's like, okay, like, he may have had a rough stretch and I have to go back and look at the game logs, but you know, I think that Sandy's fine. Like, I think you have to know what you're getting out of him. He's never been a big strikeout guy. But that's okay. Like, he's always been a major innings eater. He's always limited hard contact, and he's always put up really good ratios prior to 2023. So I think that Sandy comes back in fine form. I'm not particularly worried about him. I actually think it's still a pretty good time to buy in on him. I'm surprised that there hasn't been more hype, just given kind of, I say consistent, like he was pretty consistent for the majority of his career outside of 2023, and really it wasn't all that bad of a season, in my opinion. I know the K rate dipped below 20%, the ERA was north of 4, but still he gave you the volume you wanted to see, and overall I thought the ratios were still fine. So what does a bounce back look like for Sandy coming off of surgery? I don't know. I mean, if he gives you something in the upper threes, like a 3.7, 3.8 type of ERA over a full season, like if you get a pretty healthy workload, then I think you're going to be happy with what you get out of him from where you've invested. And I wouldn't expect the strikeout rate to be bad. I mean, like he may live in the 21, 22, 23% range, but that's okay. I think that where his value is right now, there's certainly a good return on investment.
Yeah, I co-sign all of that.
Yep, as do I. All right, let's keep it right in the state of Florida. Go over to the Tampa Bay Rays for a trio of exciting young arms. We got Shane Baz, Taj Bradley, and Ryan Pepiot, who is the old man of the group at 27, but Bradley is only 23, Shane Baz 25. Very intriguing, exciting rotation in general. I mean, add in Shane McClanahan, you know, Drew Rasmussen coming back. I mean, this could be really good or go really south in a hurry. A lot of, you know, big risk reward in this Tampa Bay rotation, but we'll focus on these three younger guys here. You know, Pepiot obviously coming over from the Dodgers last year. You know, he had a 3.60 ERA in 26 starts with a 1.15 WHIP, 26% strikeout rate. Taj Bradley had as big of a roller coaster season as you could probably have. Well, okay, maybe outside of Hunter Brown, but you know, Bradley was, you know, okay. Then he was one of the top five pitchers in baseball midseason for like a 7-8 week stretch, and then he kind of faded off near the end. Overall, it was a 4.11 ERA, 1.22 WHIP, and 26.5% strikeout rate, 8% walk rate. And then Shane Baz, we're still kind of waiting to see him actually pitch, you know, a big chunk of innings. I mean, last year was a career high 79 1/3 innings, pitched 23 starts over three seasons in the majors, 2021, 2022, and 2024. But so much risk, you know, probably the biggest risk reward guy out of these three by a solid margin. We've seen him have one of the most dominant minor league seasons we've had in the last decade, several years ago, but so many injuries have racked up with him as well. So I'll kind of let you go wherever you want to go with these three, Paul, but what are your thoughts on these guys?
Big fan, especially of Pepiot and Bradley. I'm a little bit more tepid on Baz just because I kind of want to see a little bit more at the big league level that I can sink my teeth into. You mentioned the big run from Bradley last year that really showed some things. I was big on him as a prospect too, so I've kind of got some built-in love and trust for him, even though it's been volatile as a major leaguer. And then Pepiot was one of my big breakout picks last year. And so it ended up only being 130 innings, but as I mentioned earlier, we don't get huge volumes these days. So even buck 30, you can still do some good damage there. And a 3.60 ERA, 1.15 WHIP with 142 Ks for Pepiot was pretty nice. I'm pretty happy with that. I was hoping for, you know, the shoot the moon and get the really big season, but I'll take that because I still think it's in there. So I'm doubling down on Pepiot. I'm doubling down on Bradley. Like I said, I'm a little bit more tepid on Baz, but pick 175 is not out of pocket. I think it's fair. I'm probably just more inclined to go for one of the other two there, but I like Tampa Bay. They got everything to go wrong last year, right? They live with this risk, and a lot of times it works for them. When we talk about, you know, Devil Rays magic, the way we do with Cardinals devil magic, right? You know, that this pickup came out of nowhere and did well. This Jeffrey Springs goes into the rotation and does well, and Rasmussen was kind of, you know, like one of those guys too, right? Things always work out for them. Well, they finally had a year where damn near nothing. Everything broke against them.
Yep.
I don't think it's going to be like that again next year. I think they're going to get some things to go their way, and I think it's going to include Pepiot and Bradley specifically being really nice. So you'll see them on a lot of my teams across the spring for sure.
Yeah, everything went wrong for them. I mean, the, you know, luck ran out for a little bit, but I'm sure it'll come back. Like you said, that always kind of does with Tampa Bay. I mean, I like all three of these guys in a sense. You know, Bradley, he's the one that's probably most pretty frustrating for me because, you know, the stuff is there. We've seen it. He had three pitches with a 30% or 32% or higher whiff rate, splitter, curve, and cutter, but he just gets hit too hard. That's been a big issue for him.
For sure.
For a long time, even back in his minor league days, it's kind of always been his thing. Baz, I mean, I want Baz to succeed. I mean, had a chance to talk with him years ago. You know, really good interview, and just the stuff is absolutely there. But the key was kind of ticked down last year. But I kind of wonder if that was him just trying to dial it back a little bit, stay healthy, and not really fully unleash his stuff. Because we know this is a guy that has a percent to be, you know, a chance to be one of the highest K rate guys in baseball. So I just don't know with Boz. I'll probably have, I see myself having more shares of Bradley than anyone else moving forward. But Boz, this is kind of like a show, not a break, make or break year, but like a show me
right.
year.
That's where I'm at too.
Show me you can stay healthy. I'm not going to be like entirely out on you yet. That's still like a couple years away. But this year, I'm like, just show me you can just get over 100 innings. I don't need it to be 30 starts or 150. Let's get to like 110, 120, make like 26, 27 starts, something like that, to show me like, all right, this can trend in the right direction and not just be what it has been.
And I'm sure people are screaming at their phone like, he had a 3.06 ERA and a 1.06 whip. What do you want from Boz? Yeah, he did have good ratios in 79 innings of work, and I'll even give him a little bit of a leeway on the volume there because, like, I'm open to taking shots on guys who haven't necessarily proven it volume-wise. But there were some underwhelming numbers there. It was a 13% strikeout minus walk. I don't really believe the ratios yet because it came with a 198 average against. Now, he's nasty enough to keep the batting average tight against him, but not necessarily 198. That's another one of those numbers that you don't project really right. for anybody. So if he's not stranding 80% of the runners and giving up a sub-200 average, then Shane Boz probably isn't putting up another 3.06 ERA without a big improvement to his 13% strikeout minus walk. And in fairness, it's been much higher the previous two seasons, but those were inning samples of 27 and 13 innings. So I'm with you. He's got to show me more. It isn't make or break. I want to echo that point that you made there, Eric. But it is more of like, can you show me a little something? So even if I do get Boz, it won't be a multi-team investment. Whereas I am looking to get Pepiot and Bradley on multiple teams.
Yeah, no, that's fair. Chris, what are your thoughts on this fun trio here?
Yeah, I think they all have things to like. I think that Pepiot is probably my biggest target of the three. I love his fastball. I think it's so good. And he sits 95. It's a ton of ride, heavy extension, really flat vertical approach angle. Like, metrically, like, Ryan Pepiot's fastball, like, just checks all the boxes for me that I'm looking for. And he misses bats exceptionally well with it. You factor in his secondaries, too. And, you know, would I like to see him, you know, use the curve a little more potentially? I like the slider. It change up a solid offering. So he's got a well-rounded arsenal, in my opinion. And he lives in the zone a little bit too much with the fastball, which has really been his biggest downfall. But when he's locating it well, like, I think he's hard to beat up in the zone. So, like, when he's really hitting the top, like, it's going to play. So he doesn't throw the curveball much. I think there's some traits there with it that could make it a successful pitch. But right now he's primarily just living four-seam changeup. Slider with a little bit of a cutter mixed in here and there. But I really buy the talent here. I think that Pepiot is an exceptional arm. And, you know, he's one that could skyrocket the rankings, I think. Like, if you're talking about, I mean, Bradley's obviously got the talent too, but, like, pure helium, like, Ryan Pepiot is right there with, like, a Hunter Brown for me or Jared Jones that, you know, we could find their values much higher next year.
Yeah, I think all three of these guys realistically could have their values be, you know, incredibly higher than this next year than this year. But, yeah, definitely
Should we loop in Rasmussen real quick? Because you did briefly mention him, but then we didn't really hit on him.
Good talking point.
You know, he didn't pitch a ton of innings last year. It was only 28 and two-thirds, but he looked great. And I know it was mostly in, like, a hybrid role or shorter stints. But he did get four starts there as well. I think they were mostly two innings. Maybe one was – no, they were all two. So, again, little samples, but he did look good again. I'm always confident when somebody finishes the season on the field, even if it is a small sample, at least he was pitching and looking good. I'm in on Rasmussen too. Now, he deserves to be branched off from these three because he's much cheaper around pick 230, but I got no problems paying that freight on Rasmussen. And I do think he's another spring riser. So if you do like him, get him in your early drafts just in case the price rises too high for you in the spring and you're not completely left out on somebody. But I like Rasmussen in that group too. I might actually like him more than still, I know I'm crushing Boz here. I don't hate him.
That's fine.
But I like all the rest of the guys quite a bit more.
I mean, this Tampa Bay rotation in general, and they might go six-man with also Zach Littell in there as well, who's maybe the safest one of the entire rotation, which is funny to say. But, it's like all Rasmussen, Boz, Pepiot, Bradley, and McClanahan, you know, a decent chance that are ADPs and dynasty values are all higher in 12 months than they are today.
Yeah.
But they all could be lower. Obviously, so there's still risk involved, especially with Boz. Maybe McClanahan if he doesn't bounce back, or Rasmussen if he doesn't bounce back. But I mean, so maybe Bradley and Papioro are the two safest of these bunch that we were talking about here. But yeah, I love this rotation. It's a really fun rotation for sure. All right, speaking of, there's another arm that, whew, man, like we talked about Hunter Brown earlier. Now, he was terrible at the beginning of the year, but then got better. This guy was terrible at the beginning of the year and did not get better. As Bobby freaking Miller. I had so many shares of Bobby Miller, both redraft and dynasty.
Same.
Yeah, I wanted to just tell this guy to go F off, but because he burned me so hard last year. But and it's funny. There's, you know, usually I can provide some like stats or metrics or whatever, some analytical argument as to why I'm like recommending buying low on a guy. Like my only argument from Bob Miller was like, well, look how good he was before last year. I mean, last year, like there's no metric last year that was like, oh, you know, maybe. No, none of that was there. It was terrible across the board. Outside, the only sliders that are good on the Savant sliders are his fastball velo and like ground ball. It was just decent, and then the extension. But outside of that, it was a bunch of blue balls, which are not good in any aspect of life.
Nope.
No. And then it's just like surface stats, 852 ERA, 177 whip, and 13 starts. I mean, it was just terrible. I don't know. I mean, I still want to give him a shot just because price is super low everywhere, redraft, dynasty.
360-ish.
Yeah, potential for ROI is very high. And if it doesn't work out, you know, I don't think he'd be too mad about it given the price tag right now. So are you willing to kind of pay the price tag and just see if there's a bounce back, or did Miller burn you too much and you're out at this point?
He did burn me. I was very much with you on having him everywhere. He was like my sneaky Cy Young pick. I was bought in. I'm not quitting him, though. I know sometimes people get mad at the guys who burn him and say, I'm not going back to you. I go the other way. I'm like, you owe me, so I'm going to go again with you, try to get what you didn't pay me last year, and then we'll see where it goes. And again, I do think a lot of the issues with Bobby Miller, because we should point out he's not penciled into the rotation right now. And I do think he's going to have to earn a spot. But we also know that there's no universe where the Dodgers are going to use fewer than like 10 starters, even if they do find some health, because they're playing for October anyway. So even if Glasnow is healthy, don't think he's not going to get a two-week break here randomly or get an extra few days on a start to fit guys in. And if Bobby Miller can get back to the guy that we saw in 23 that made Eric and I so excited about him, he's going to pop off. So yes, I'm rebuying. 360 is just not a bad pick to pay. Even if it flops again, I can cut him. The tough part last year, Eric, and I'm sure you dealt with this, was we paid so much that we
held
kept
on
eating
to
it. Yep. And I understand the sunk cost fallacy and all that, and you got to cut bait. It's easy to say now because we know the answer is that it never came back. But Eric and I were probably sitting around thinking, well, if we cut him and he comes back to what we think, we're going to look like idiots. So, no, I am going to hit the rebuy button. But if he burns me this year, then it's going to take a lot to get me back on track. I'll tell you that.
I like that. Like, Bobby, you owe me a good season.
That's right. I'm owed now, so get back on the squad. You're not going anywhere.
Yeah, there was with the price tag you had to, you know, use to get him. Like, I was like, yeah, I can't, you know, get rid of him just yet. Then he had a start here and there where you like for instance, like look at the game log here, like, all right, like July 2nd, 5 innings, 2 runs. I mean, it's 3 walks, 4 Ks. We're like, all right, maybe he's turning it around.
It's coming along.
Then 9 earned after that. Then it was like, you know, a month or so off, and then he had like a, you know, 6 inning, 3 runs, 0 walk, 9K, and then it was like 7 earned, 6 earned.
Those were the two. The Tampa Bay Baltimore back-to-back that were pretty good. And neither were standout, but like they were pretty good. That's where I was like, no, I'm going to get a good final month. Yep. 7 earned in Anaheim against the Angels. And I'm like, okay, I'm very angry at this guy right now. So, yeah, I understand anybody who is jumping off the Bobby Miller train, but I would just continue to harp on the price and say, like, he just can't hurt you that much here. So if it does flop again, I would cut in, like, the first 2 weeks this time around.
Yep. And then remember that first start? 6 innings, 2 hits, no runs, 1 walk, 11 strikeouts. So, like, jumping for joy after that first start against
Smith. I was like, I called it. I knew he was going to be great this year, right? I did the classic overreaction opening day. I'm like, yeah, I mean, or game four, as it were, opening week. I'm like, yeah, I nailed this. I knew he was going to be good, and he put up 6 scoreless. Little did I know that the Cubs would kill him the next outing and start a really tumultuous season for Miller.
Yep. Then he crapped his pants and never recovered after that. So, Chris, what about you? Are you still in on Bobby Miller? I feel like from past talks, you're a little less optimistic than Paul and I.
I have no idea. Like, one, I mean, they're just loaded. Like, they just keep adding starters. Like, I think Bobby Miller's going to be in AAA to start the year, and that's totally fair.
Yep.
And so I do think it matters, like, where you draft him to. Can you work around that? Like, if it's draft champions, I don't advocate putting too many minor leaguers or prospects on your team. But if you have one or two and Bobby Miller's one of them, I am okay with that. But I do agree, you don't want to over-index. If it's a 10 or 12 teamer, you probably don't need to draft him necessarily. You can maybe try to make him a waiver pickup in season.
Yeah. The shoulder also concerns me. Like, is it right? I don't know. And that's one concern that I do have. Like, one, the Dodgers' depth, and two, like, is the shoulder 100%? And I'm not sure anybody knows the answer to that outside of Bobby and his training staff. We know the talent. We've seen the talent for sure. I'm just skeptical, like, to consistently start in Los Angeles, like, you've got to be on your game. And, you know, considering what they've got, like, where's Miller on the pecking order now? And I don't really know that answer. But I do know that they have a ton of talented arms. I also know those arms all get injured quite often. So there could be innings for Bobby Miller to find his way back in, even if he starts in AAA. So it's a tough line to walk right now as far as, like, what to do with him out of the gate, where to draft him. And I'm avoiding him for the most part, but I think, like, having one share is probably a good idea in case it all comes back together.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Yeah, having that one share just in case. I like that. All right, last guy before we get into our, you know, breakout pick from Mr. Spore. Talk about Brian Wu here, 24-year-old with the Seattle Mariners. So I think there's a good amount of hype. Obviously, there was some trade talks. You know, I don't know how far they ended up going, but obviously between Boston and Seattle, centered around, like, just a Cassis for one of Wu or Miller, and Seattle shut that down pretty quickly. And there's people I've talked to, a lot of people just love Brian Wu, and he had a very good year last year. 289 ERA in 22 starts, whip of 0.90, only a 2.8% walk rate, but also only a 21.4% strikeout rate. Also, like, his xERA was right there as well, so it wasn't like it was a fluky good year, but obviously kind of I think this is going to be hard for him to maintain. Rookie year ERA was 4.21. With a much higher walk rate, though, only 8.5%, and also struck out more in his rookie year, 25% strikeout rate there. So I have two very different years so far from Brian Wu. Where are you at on Wu there, Spore? Are you kind of buying in, or is he more of a sell high for you?
No, I'm actually pretty strong on him. He's inside my top 45, sitting there at pick 44 for Brian Wu, and I definitely think that he and Bryce Miller both get credit for their improvements against opposite-handers last year, which would be lefties for both of them since they are right-handers. Now, I think Miller's was a little bit more bankable because he didn't develop the pitch to go with it, whereas I think just that Wu just kind of got better, whereas Miller, I can't remember, was it a straight-up changeup or was it a splitter? I can't remember exactly what he added, but made him a lot better and more effective against lefties. I do still have some concern about Wu's health. But as I've said multiple times during this episode already, that's not something that's going to push me away from guys if the talent is there. I'm just not going to run scared on injury risk with pitchers because there is no such thing as safety. I know I keep repeating that, but I have to drive it home.
It's very important.
That people stop thinking. And by the way, I love guys like Logan Webb and Framber Valdez. And what do I cite? I cite their innings, of course. All I'm saying is just don't think it's guaranteed. Just keep stocking more and more pitching. You can never have too much, right? That's a cliche for a reason. You can never have too much pitching. 100%. So looking at what Wu did, though, in that second year, the control went to the next level. The way this kid commands his arsenal is so impressive that I really think that there is more here. And so while I'm not necessarily going to bank for another 289 ERA, he's another guy where I look at his ERA indicators, which are sitting in the mid-threes, 375 Sierra, 340 FIP. And I feel really good about that. Strong mid-threes ERA, good whip, and I think there is some strikeout upside. We saw a 25% K rate in 2023. That was only 87 innings. It did dip down to 21 last year, but it came with all that great walk improvement. I think the next step is improving the command. I think last year was a big step forward for his control, and the next step is the command, which means he would put the ball where he wants, both in and outside of the zone, as opposed to just filling the zone. So I love these Seattle pitchers. I think they all kind of learn off of each other and learn things from each other. I think Wu is very much on the rise, so I am buying off the big year.
You know where I kind of feel he's going to wind up? But this is not like a direct comp player to player, but just like overall value, and I think stats could be similar. I think where like Jose Berríos has been.
Yeah.
You know, mid-three ERA, you know, slightly above average K rate, not like elite in any regard, but just like, you know, and Berríos, I was kind of an anti-Berríos guy years ago, but he's been, you know, for the most part, pretty consistent. So I think
outside of that one bad year where he had a terrible opening day and never got back, he has been about as steady as you can get.
Yeah. So yeah, I think mid-threes ERA, like a 23-24% K rate, something like that. I think that's kind of where Brian Wu could be. And obviously, he's younger, so there's, you know, obviously that upside for more, or you wish you hope for more. But obviously, yeah, I do kind of share that the arm issues and wonder if they do pop up. But definitely a very talented young arm. That entire Seattle rotation is just so freaking good. Offense is another story, but rotation is
very
good.
Would you guys have done that Casas deal for one of the starters? Or do you think for a first baseman it's not enough there?
I like Miller a bit more than Wu. Mm-hmm. So if it was Miller, I might have. I'm a big Casas guy. I love Casas. So like I think he's gonna turn into a middle of the order stud. So I was like, all right, if Seattle was asking for like him plus for one of those back end two guys, I mean, obviously we weren't gonna get like Kirby or Gilbert or anything like that.
Right.
But yeah, I don't know. If it was straight up for like Miller, I consider it. Wu, I mean, as a Red Sox fan, I might have considered that, but my love for Casas kind of sways me that way, but I could see a future where I'd be okay with that deal.
Yeah, I got Miller a cut above Wu. I do kind of pair the two. Like, they have two duos. It's Gilbert and Kirby that are similar to me, and then Miller and Wu. But I do think Miller pushed himself a step above, and I did look it up. It was a splitter last year that he developed that really helped him with his platoon issues. So I think he's more bankable, Miller, but I do like Wu as well.
You see that video the other day that he had is that a cutter, maybe? You see that video, Paul?
Oh, I did not see that. Oh, that would be
he posted
be
it.
Huge.
He posted it himself.
I would love that.
Yeah, and he posted like some of the data on it, which was pretty cool to see. So, yeah, that's an intriguing development.
Market's hot on him, too, though. Bryce Miller goes pick 81. Yeah. Wu goes pick 137. So I'm not saying I wouldn't pay. Like I said, I do love Bryce Miller, but like the market's there. So you're not sneaking him past anybody.
Right, exactly. Chris, you buying Wu moving forward?
Yeah, he's so fascinating if he's healthy. I mean, the strike rates on his four-seam slider and sinker are pretty absurd. Like, he was 72% strike or higher on all three.
That's insane.
And, yeah, that's it's bananas. Almost like he lives in the zone a little too much.
Right.
And so, like, you love to see the strike rates be good, but, like, there's also, like, the negative of being too high. So, like, I'm looking at his heat maps on the pitches, and there's definitely some missed fastballs. Like, you can definitely see when he leaves the four-seam or the sinker over the heart of the play, like, it's going to get hit. The sliders, the locations are much better. It's just such a fascinating mix, and his four-seam's so unique. Like, it's got a sub-4 vertical approach angle, which is absurd. Like, he throws from a 5-foot release height and gets, like, 16 inches of vert. Like, it's just stupid stuff with the fastball. And it's just all about command, as Paul said. So, do I think that the stuff's there to see the strikeouts tick up? Absolutely. I mean, I think the arsenal's good enough to see a 25%+ strikeout rate guy. So, can he actualize it? We'll see. Is he healthy? That's my other question.
That's the biggest question.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest question we have to see answered is, can he handle a full starter's workload? And if he answers those questions, then he's absolutely going to skyrocket. But I agree, this rotation is absurd. And I would have made the trade, like, Boston needs an arm. Like, I think Casas is replaceable. Like, that's a replaceable profile, in my opinion, at first base power bat. And, I mean, if you got Bryce Miller, if you got Brian Wu, like, I think you're doing pretty good. Everybody hates on Luis Castillo because of his contract, but 25 mil for a starter like that in this market
is
not bad.
No.
Really,
I mean, we just saw
bad.
Nady Evaldi get that deal that Luis Castillo has left over the next 3 years, and Castillo is much younger than Nady Evaldi. So, you know, I don't think that's a bad deal at all. And people were telling me, like, oh, Castillo's contract's so bad, it's really not. Like, he's a great arm for that price.
He's much safer than Eovaldi, too. And I love Eovaldi. I loved him when he was in the Red Sox. He's always been a pretty fun guy to watch. But, yeah, he's not exactly the most durable guy. And Castillo's been one of the more, you know, safer, reliable guys in baseball on the mound. So, yeah, I would have loved to have gotten Castillo. Maybe that would have been a different-looking deal. But, yeah, I would have loved to have gotten Castillo. I was actually hoping for that, but did not come to fruition. And Seattle needs, you know, more hitting, too, as we all know. It's like, J-Rod can't do it all himself, so.
No. And that park just stifles guys, right? Like, there's a reason that strikeouts are up so much. I've heard that the batter's eye is bad. The climate environment, they need more hitting. And you'd think a guy like Casas would be appealing to them. I wonder if they're in on Pete at all, since he is, you know, having trouble figuring out how to sign.
Yeah.
So, or not figuring out how to sign, figuring it somewhere to sign. Sorry, I was watching the fourth down play for Buffalo that they just botched, and it looks like that game might be over there. So, anyway,
Shocking.
I know. That Buffalo was in the KC. Crazy. Crazy.
But, yeah, that'd be a good fit. I think I love Alonzo in Boston. I'm not to get on a hitting rampage here as we're talking about pitchers, but, yeah, it's going to be fun to see where he signs and Bregman and even Jack Flaherty. But, all right, last little bit here before we get out of here. Paul, is there any – you can list off more than one name if you want. Just a name or two that aren't kind of considered a consensus top 50-ish pitcher at this point. Any couple names you think might make a good jump into that top 50 in 2025?
Yeah, so I got somebody like a Gavin Williams who goes around pitcher 70, 72 in current ADP that I'm really excited about in Cleveland. Obviously, he did hit a little bit of a sophomore slump right down to the fact that he only threw 76 innings and they were a mixed bag of success at the same time. But I think that there is an arsenal here that can find the success that we saw more in 2023. Now, he still needs to figure out if he can kind of get past the walks a little bit, because even in the breakout 2023 came with 11% walk rate, but he's able to miss bats, keep the ball in the park. I kind of implicitly trust Cleveland to develop their pitchers well. They have a nice history with it. When guys are good, they usually get the most out of them. It's just that last year it was Bibee and kind of a group of clowns behind him, right? Like Ben Lively was like the number two for a while. That's why they had to lean on the bullpen so much, right? And by the time October came around, the bullpen was a bit gassed. But I think Gavin Williams can step up in that role again this year. He's only going to be 25 years old. We've seen two partial seasons, basically two half seasons at 16 starts apiece. Add it all up, it's 158 innings of a 4.04 ERA, 1.31 whip. Nothing that's eye-popping, but again, 24% K rate, the potential for more. I really love what that curveball can do, and I love a guy that keeps the ball in the yard and can kind of build off of that. Even if the walks don't improve a ton this year, I think we could shave the ERA back down into the mid to upper threes with a decent whip. You're still going to want to protect him a little bit, because if the walks don't move forward with Gavin Williams, a whip will be his challenge. But strikeouts, ERA, and then decent win probability being on Cleveland. I know he went 3-10 last year, even though they were a division winner. I think that was some bad luck. Even with a near 5 ERA, I still think he deserved better than a 3-10 record because of how good that bullpen was. And I think he'll have more win opportunity this year, Gavin Williams. So he's probably my favorite one there because he's going outside the top 70 pitchers in most drafts. And somebody that I really liked last year that really showed a lot of glimpses, and maybe you can speak to your like or dislike of him since he's on your team, Eric, is Cutter Crawford. I'm still a sucker for him. Like I said, there were aspects of last year that looked pretty good, but as the summer wore on, things kind of caught up to him. He was doing a little smoke and mirror stuff that it wasn't terribly surprising that things went a little south on him. But even with that, he showed some glimpses. It all comes down to keeping the ball in the yard for him, the opposite of Gavin Williams. If he can do that, if he can get better, and he's another guy who maybe trades, you guys were talking about Brian Wu throwing too many strikes, maybe trade a little bit less control, a.k.a. being in the zone a ton for Cutter, to lessen the homers. Maybe the walk rate jumps up. I think last year it was around 8. It was 7. Maybe it jumps up to 8.5%, but you don't allow 1.7 homer per 9. So I'm still in on Cutter Crawford as well. Gavin Williams more so, but Cutter Crawford would be my secondary pick.
Yeah, I mean, I like both those guys. I mean, Crawford, obviously, he was just allowing too many home runs. Like every game you turn on with him starting, it was like, oh, there's two more home runs.
Yep.
This is like... It was rough, but then you saw the glimpses in the middle of all those dingers. You saw, there's still a pretty good pitcher. Not a stud by any means, but you look at what he did in 2023, where he had a little bit lower ERA. He's an slightly above average K rate guy, keeps, the walk rate in check. I mean, he's a guy that, not going to dazzle anybody, but you need these types of guys on your pitching staff, both redraft and
sure.
These kind of guys that you fill in around the more buzzy names. And yeah, Gavin Williams, he's been one I've always liked for a while, back to his prospect days in the Cleveland system, where the walks have always been a little bit on the higher end with him. So I kind of think, but if everything just kind of goes right for him and he kind of reaches a higher percentage outcome, yeah, I think maybe it's something like a Freddie Peralta, where Peralta's been a little bit of a higher walk rate guy, but good strikeout rates, got maybe not an ace, but good number two, something like that. I think that upside is definitely there. So yeah, I like both those guys. Chris, did you want to throw a name in, or just your thoughts on those two that Paul just mentioned?
I like David Festa a bit. Does he vault up a
like
ton? I don't know. Like, see a top 25 on him, I doubt it. But, I certainly like David Festa's chance to take that step forward this year. He definitely showed some good things. Out of the gate, he was really bad in his pro debut the first couple starts. And then he came back and was really good down the stretch. So
it got hidden, too. And that happens sometimes in those small samples. you get clobbered a few times, you can't work it off in terms of the composite area. That's why you always got to be checking game logs, folks.
Yep. Yep. And Festa was definitely one of those guys. So I think he's one that could take a big step forward. I'm excited to see what he does this year. He'd be my pick, I think, that could take a solid leap. It's an interesting group. I like Hayden Birdsong a little bit, too. I'm not sure how he fits into the picture, but I do think he's going to get plenty of starts in San Francisco. And I think Birdsong's still a little bit underrated, so I think he's one to watch out for. But, yeah, Festa's kind of my guy. I've liked him for some time, and I think that, you know, it's just a solid mix, and he throws enough strikes with a big frame and makes it work.
Just to put a bow on Festa, 1080 ERA in his first two starts. Five innings, got clobbered by Arizona and the Tigers, 5 and 7 runs respectively. 381 over the final 54 innings with 69 strikeouts.
Yeah.
So, you know, a lot of good work there. And some of that, the ERA could maybe have been a little bit lower if they'd have pushed him a little bit, but they were protecting him. A lot of those outings were under 5 innings. I think next year he gets to be more of a consistent 5-6 inning guy instead of a just below 5-inning guy like he was for much of this year. So Fest is a great call out, and I'll co-sign that 100%.
Yeah, a couple of good young pitchers in that Minnesota system. Another guy I'm starting to come around on a little bit. Also, Brendan Faught into the mix here. I don't think he said he'd be a stud, but he was really solid last year.
NL Cutter Crawford. Manage the homers, and he can be a monster.
Yeah, all his ERA indicators are 3.6, 3.7, 3.8 range. You know, so that 4.71 surface ERA was a bit high, but he had about 19% K minus walker. He's always been a low walk guy. Can miss bats with the sweeper and the changeup. Both had a whiff rate above 30%. Curveball was just below it. I think he could be a guy that gets into maybe in that Jose Berríos range as well. 3.5 to 3.7 ERA. Maybe again 18% strikeout minus walker rate. Have a more of a high floor guy, not a buzzy name, but I'm starting to come around on him a little bit. I'll probably have some shares of him this year as well. But that's going to wrap us up. Paul, thank you so much for joining us. Always a pleasure chatting with you and seeing you out in Arizona every year. You want anything, any closing thoughts here before we get out of here?
Great talking with you guys. Like I said at the outset, really excited that baseball is back. And like I said, once that Super Bowl hits, then we get all the football fans back. They kind of come. Bills fans and Commanders fans, welcome. Your team just lost, so now you can totally turn your attention to baseball now. And, yeah, we got the sleeper in the bus going on, Justin and I twice a week, and he and Jason on Sundays. Unfortunately, they might be crying next Sunday because they're both Commanders fans. And then, of course, I got my articles over at Fangraphs as well, fantasy.fangraphs.com. I'll have sleepers and bust articles coming in February. Got the SP guys up right now with updates going up consistently. So, yeah. We are in the thick of it, and it's awesome.
It absolutely is. Obviously, Paul, one of the best in the business. If you're not following him for some odd reason, at Sporer on Twitter. And we will see you again in a few days for our Dynasty Relief Pitcher episode with Mr. Mike Carter. That's going to be another great one to close out this series. But until then, everyone take care.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.